Love Talk Radio.
Time for another special edition of the National Football League and all the other things that go along with what went on this weekend. We're going to go over some baseball as Hanley Ramirez and the Red Sox pretty much took care of any chances the Yankees had of making a stretch run. I should talk about that little tiff between Madison Baumgartner and my man Yasiel Puig. It went down last night in L.A. But, of course, we're going to talk some football. And, again, Steve Callis will be joining us shortly. And we're going to start with the Philadelphia Eagles. I think my man right now is on the line. Steven, are you there, my friend?
I sure am. Great to be with you as always,
and there
Joe.
There he is. Like clockwork, my man. Always delivers. How are you, my friend? What did you think about week two? Now we have another installment, another piece of evidence to work with. We only had part of the story week one, and I think week two, I'm not sure if we know any better what's going on in the National Football League. We'll start with the NFC East. The Eagles, the showcase last night. Do you think the president, Barack Obama, is finally on the Wentz wagon? His Bears get whacked last night at home, turned the ball over three times in the second half, and Carson Wentz, you know, looked like an all-pro.
Well, he can't be on the Bears bandwagon, that's for sure. No matter, I understand he's from Chicago, he's got to root for them, but they're looking at a long season. You know, now 1-8 at home under John Fox. Can you imagine going the whole season
and
last year 1-7 and losing to Philly at home? Now, obviously, Philly's better, and Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz is better than I thought he was, obviously. But again, they've beaten the Browns and the Bears, so that's great to be 2-0, tied for first with the Giants. But I think we'll have to hold on on Philadelphia until they play some tougher competition.
No, I agree with you. And, of course, that tougher competition, as you requested, coming into the link this weekend in the form of the Pittsburgh Steelers. So that certainly will be a test.
Absolutely.
We shall see. I know we're in a little bit of a holding pattern. I just thought the way he looked and composed himself and just the way he went about his business, I know it's lesser competition, but still pretty impressive for a rookie. I think the only thing that I had a problem with is he doesn't know how to go out of bounds without taking a lick.
Yeah, and that's a problem, as we've seen a number of, you know, RG3 over the years and this year and others. You got to take some Russell Wilson film and learn how to slide.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, you mentioned the Giants and different competition. Now, the Giants' defense were last in the league last year and giving up 1 million yards a game. They're eighth in the league this year. They won two games by a total of 4 points. But they took down the Saints, a high-powered offense, as we know. Drew Brees, 4 touchdowns the week before and a ton of yards. Giants get it done, albeit in not so fancy of a fashion, but they get it done. They're 2-0.
Hey, spent $200 million on their defense, and that's, you know, usually you can't buy things. Maybe the Yankees bought the 2009 World Series. We can debate that another time. But they did what they had to do to make themselves competitive. I thought that was going to be a shootout. The Giants didn't even score an offensive touchdown. But unlike last year when the Giants lost 5 games under 6 points and seemed to always lose the game at the end, now they're finding a way to win. And you know the old saying, good teams find a way to win, and certainly off to a 2-0 start in what I still think is not such a great division as we talked about before. I think it's pointing up for the Giants this year.
I agree with you, Steve. And, of course, we're on the phone with Steve Callis. I'm Joe Stazak here for the next 45 minutes. Steve, let's go right down the division then, because you talk about how weak of a division it might be, and I agree with you. I mean, Dallas, they're 1-1. They didn't look great. I think they were helped by a flailing and fledgling Kirk Cousins. Your thoughts on his performance? And it seems like the vets in that locker room not so happy with their quarterback at this point.
Yeah, pretty scary, and I'm a Kirk Cousins guy after last year. We talked about it last week, 68.5%. But, you know, he was 28 for 46 for 364 yards. Yes, he threw a terrible interception, and these things happen. But I'm surprised that they've disappeared on Kirk Cousins. There must be something that we don't know about, because he was great last year. We can go back to RG3's rookie year, which was also Cousins' rookie year, if you'll recall, in that playoff game where RG3 put himself back in. I really thought at the time, and I'm no Washington fan, but I really thought at the time if Cousins had stayed in that playoff game, they could have won. Once RG3 came back in, he was still hurt. He got run over. He got hurt again. They lost that game. It's been all downhill for RG3 since then, including this year, as we saw with the Browns. But Kirk Cousins, he even put up good numbers. Now, it's not all about numbers. It's easier to pass in the NFL today. But if they don't get that straightened out quickly, again, the reason I think they can hang around, although they've got the Giants this week, the reason I think they can hang around is because I'm not convinced of that division. And you've got two rookie quarterbacks in that division playing far better than I certainly thought. You know, Prescott at Dallas, Wentz at Philly. I didn't think it was going to be like that. So it's almost a role reversal, frankly. Eli Manning's got decent numbers, but can't put the ball in the end zone. And you have these two rookie quarterbacks who, playing on the field the first 2 weeks, might be the best two quarterbacks in that division, which is hysterical to me.
It's unbelievable. And, you know, Dallas, Dak Prescott hasn't thrown an interception yet as a pro. And that includes preseason. It wasn't spectacular, but enough for the win. And Zeke Elliott, a guy that I still think is going to be a super stud, had a little bit of a reality check, fumbled a couple times after a nice opening week. He did have 83 yards, but had to come out of the game, and the old veteran, the former Washington Redskins Alfred Morris, had to come and clean up his mess.
Hey, I got to say, Elliott's the luckiest running back in pro football running behind that line. But I'll also say this. If you got the fumbles, you'll be out of there quickly no matter who you are. And if he follows up with another one next week, I got to say, Alfred Morris, I know his numbers in Washington went down the last few years, but at his best, he's a really good running back. And again, put a really good running back behind the Dallas line. So he's right now is coming in, as you said, to score that touchdown, clean up the mess. But he might be the number one guy if Elliott gets fumbleitis, and that's hurt more than one or two running backs in the history of the NFL. If you put the ball on the ground, as they say, if you fumble a lot, that's the quickest way to get out of the lineup, no matter how talented you are.
Yeah, because turnovers are the ultimate killer in any sport, but especially in the National Football League. All right, let's go back to that Eagles-Bears game last night. There's a lot of talk about Jay Cutler, and I've never been a big Jay Cutler fan. He's got a golden arm. We all know that, likes to flaunt it, but left the game complaining of a thumb injury, might have a sprain. It doesn't need surgery, apparently, but, you know, went to the locker room after that pick, an awful pick. He fumbled earlier in the game, although I thought that was a better defensive play than him just coughing it up. And I know he had a problem with his teammate McPhee. He gave him a little crap on the sideline. And your thoughts on Jay Cutler? I mean, it's kind of split down the middle on some, you know, some of the shows I watched today and the pundits. Some are coming to his defense. I think he's kind of a tank job, and I don't know how he can command any troops to lead them anywhere the way he acts at times.
I agree with the last thing you said about him acting poorly at times, but, you know, with the Bears since 2008, I think he's taken a tremendous beating, sacked like 242 times, hit more than any quarterback. First week of the NFL, he was hit on 15% of his dropbacks. Give that a little thought. 1 in 6, essentially, you're getting knocked down or sacked. So he does have a gun arm, but I think we know what Jay Cutler is. I don't see how he's ever really going to get the Bears or anybody over the top. But he's a talented guy with a gun for an arm. I happen to think he's tough because he takes such a beating. Now, look, if you got a little problem with your thumb, it's very hard to throw a football. So I don't think he was a wimp or whatever. And as for McPhee, you know, you're on the pup list, so you might want to think twice before you run out on the field and bump the guy in street clothes. That's pretty bush league. But having said that, I think Cutler is a tough guy. I think he's got some ability. But I just don't think if you're relying on him to make you, for example, a playoff team or to go far in the playoffs, I just don't think he's really been that guy. And I don't think he's going to become that guy.
No, I agree with you. If he hasn't become that guy by now, I don't think Jay Cutler's ever going to become that guy. Along with Steve Callis, I'm Joe Stazak here on the Sports Line till 6:15 Eastern time. I think Carson Wentz and the Eagles and Eagle Nation might be putting Teddy Bridgewater on the independent ballot for president this year because unfortunately, he had to bite the bullet, but he did. Sam Bradford then goes over to Minnesota. Carson Wentz gets a start. And hey, Sam Bradford, second week over there, he gets the start. And he beats Green Bay on national TV. Your thoughts on Sammy Sleeves getting it done over there? Is this possibly a place that Sam Bradford can kind of entrench himself and be successful?
Well, Bradford's a talented guy. He can make all the throws. He was 22 for 31 for 286, two touchdowns. Most importantly, no picks. Stephon Diggs had his coming out party, I thought. 8 receptions for 167 yards.
He was unbelievable.
I think Minnesota's going places. Look, I put them in the playoffs even after Bridgewater got hurt before they got Bradford, and they had to give Bradford an extra week, which, you know, I totally agree with. You can't walk into another system and learn it in 8 days. He learned it pretty well in 15 days, though. So I think Minnesota's a major player. Now, they were at home. And I got to say, Mike Zimmer, for whatever reason, Minnesota doesn't usually beat Green Bay, as you know, but Mike Zimmer usually holds down Aaron Rodgers. 20 for 36, 213 yards, one TD, one pick. That's not Aaron Rodgers. And he always has those kinds of stats against Minnesota. He usually finds a way to win, but couldn't do it this time as he was intercepted late. But I think, Minnesota can go places with Bradford. I picked them as the wild card in Green Bay winning. But again, Minnesota won at home, so we'll have to see if they can beat Green Bay in Green Bay. That may be the deciding game for the division.
Very possibly. I am impressed, and I take back everything I said about the great trade robbery, too. I mean, giving up a 1-4 for a quarterback can come in and maybe guide the ship when you have a window and your defense is playing that well. Of course, without Adrian Peterson, and of course, that happened because he was my first overall pick in my fantasy draft. And the last time I had the first pick, Tom Brady goes down in the first quarter of that Chiefs game. So, yeah, that was the kiss of death. But so that's just the way it is around here. Let's talk about those New England Patriots and Dr. Belichick certainly having his way with the media again today. They might be without Jimmy Garoppolo on Thursday night against the Texans. He has the AC joint sprain in his shoulder, so they might be going down. Now, Jacqueline Bisset now might be quarterbacking them. And does it matter anymore for the Patriots? They're 2-0. They're going to be at least 2-2 when Bredo comes back from his pitch and catch tour. Your thoughts on Belichick and what a job he's done, and can they win with Brissett, Jacoby Brissett, in Thursday night against the Texans?
I think they can win with just about anyone, but it's going to be harder, whatever you think of Garoppolo. He had 2 years behind Tom Brady, and he certainly learned his lessons well. He's a mobile guy,
sure,
as is Brissett, but Brissett, you know, he's had one training camp. So I'd be surprised, and I haven't heard anything yet. The Patriots have not signed another quarterback. I thought they'd sign somebody somewhere, somehow, because I don't think you can go into that game with Julian Edelman as your backup, which also hasn't been announced. Maybe they'll dress Garoppolo and have him as the backup. But I don't think, you know, all I've heard about this AC capsule in your shoulder is you're going to have trouble lifting your hand over your head if it's a sprain, and it's nothing worse than that. So I don't see how you're going to throw. But again, you know, as Belichick says, I'm not a doctor either. So we just have to wait and see. But, you know, it is a 2-week, as everyone's been rightly saying, it is a 2-week issue now until Brady comes back. And I think for most Patriot fans, I thought they could be 3-1. I didn't think they'd beat Arizona. Then they beat Arizona. I was like, wow, they're going to be 4-0. But now this throws a monkey wrench into it. Houston, as you know, has an excellent defense. That could be tough for a real rookie quarterback who was 6-for-9 for 92 yards, give him credit. I was more concerned at the end, frankly, and it was a weird game, but I was more concerned with the Patriots' defense because for the first time they did seem to let up. And Belichick, not that I could ever criticize Bill Belichick, but to me, he's got a habit of when he's up of just rushing three. And rushing three, which to me is a prevent defense, often gives the quarterback 2 extra seconds, gets him into trouble. And look, whatever you think of that game, and as you know, I picked the Patriots -4.5 last week. Whatever you think of that game, it ended with a throw into the end zone to tie a game, and not a Hail Mary like some people said. It was like it's from the 28-yard line or something like that. So, yes, it was intercepted. It didn't matter that it was intercepted because it was overthrown. But still, to come from where they were, 21-0 they were winning, I thought they were going to score 50 with Garoppolo the way that game started. It was like a video game. It was like 11-9. But I think the Patriots are safe because I think they'll get one of these next two games, probably Buffalo in New England. I don't know what's going on with Rex up there. But they're probably going to be 3-1. But even if they're 2-2, I think Patriots fans would have taken that because they all chalked up Arizona to a loss. So I think they're in good shape. And then when Brady comes back, I think it's going to be Brady with a chip on his shoulder, like when they went 18-0 before they lost to the Giants after, you know, Spygate.
Right. All right. Yeah, I think you know what to expect from the Patriots, and Brady always has that chip on his shoulder. It just depends on how big it is. I think it's going to be large. Let's talk about the team who drafted Jared Goff first overall. You know, he ended up dressing the other day, and you know they were horrible in the opening week against San Francisco. And we talked about Jeff Fisher. How does he keep doing it? After we spoke, he got a 3-year extension. Which is unbelievable. They still haven't scored a touchdown, but they beat Seattle, who's a decent squad, at least we would think. And they beat them 9-3 on field goals, and they still look pretty bad. I know they're 1-1, but your thoughts on that mess out there in Los Angeles?
Well, Jared Goff got a promotion, right? He was the backup quarterback this week, so he's climbing the ladder. He went from 3 and inactive to 2 in the backup. But, you know, it's hard to compare – getting killed by the 49ers, them beating Seattle. I understand the home game is very important, but that is such a turnaround to me. And as for Seattle, and look, I like Seattle to win that division and go far in the playoffs, but their weakness is their offensive line. I think what happened is Russell Wilson, to me, was not 100%, did not have that escapability. He had a similar, if not worse, offensive line last year. And look, they started off bad last year, so maybe they'll get it together. But Wilson has to be 100% healthy because all he does is escape, and that's what he has to do. It doesn't look like they've upgraded the offensive line very much this year, and that's going to be a problem. But don't forget, they were terrible at the beginning last year as well. Some way found a way to turn it around. So give credit to the Rams defense, but I think a lot of it was they just ran through and around the Seahawks offensive line, which was ranked like 31st or 32nd in Pro Football Focus. I thought they could overcome and still think they can overcome it this year because, quite frankly, they overcame it last year. And I still think they're loaded. They're good defensively. I mean, you know, they gave up 10 points the first game, 9 points the second game. Obviously, defense is not the problem, but the health of Russell Wilson is, and he has to be 100% healthy to make that offense go.
No, I agree. Now, a little bit north of there, that game in Alameda County, I think you were at that game, Oakland, Atlanta. Your thoughts on the black hole?
Yeah, well, you know, what a dump that place is. I'm sorry. The Oakland, Alameda County, I mean, it is just, it's hard to believe that professional football teams, and you know the Athletics play there as well, and professional baseball teams play there. Now, look, it was a strange game. Look, Raider fans are lunatics. We've seen that on TV for decades. My son moved out there to take a job, so we got seats in the upper deck. If you look behind the end zone, they've got like an extra upper deck up there. We sat up there with the real lunatics. It was 82 degrees at game time, felt like 100. Believe it or not, the Oakland Alameda County Coliseum ran out of water at halftime, and we were just dying. But what was worse, and look, I picked the Raiders to win that division, as you know. What was worse is that their defense is non-existent. Khalil Mack, you know, maybe he's getting doubled on every play. Bruce Irvin came over from Seattle. I read an article where he said he can't believe what's happening here. He's never seen anything like it. Well, of course he hasn't. He's been playing in Seattle's defense all these years. So it was disappointing because I don't know how their defense is going to get a lot better, and they got to get better quickly because they gave up 69 points in the first two games. They gave up over 1,000 yards in offense combined in the first two games. Carr is great. I mean, Carr's not good. He's great. 34 for 45 for 299, 3 touchdowns, no picks. I mean, he's really good. But they had a strange call. I don't know if you saw this call in the game. They were down 28-21. Cooper ran kind of an out along the sideline. I thought Trufant pushed him out. Cooper came back in and caught that touchdown pass to tie up the game in the fourth quarter. And they said that Cooper went out on his own so he couldn't come back in and be the first one to, you know, he couldn't make the catch.
Yep,
and I watched it over and over and over. And I was there when it happened. It just looked like he clearly was pushed out. And for some reason, the ref didn't think he was pushed out. Now, what intelligent wide receiver is going to run out of bounds on purpose? I mean, it just makes no sense. Now, I'm not saying they would have won, but that would have tied up the game. But if they're going to be in shootouts like this, you're going to see Del Rio going for two more more times than not if they tie up the game late in the game. But give Atlanta credit on the road. You know, they're not usually good on the road. They started great last year, fell off a cliff. Julio Jones is Julio Jones. You know, Matty Ryan had a really good game. So I give them credit, but I have to say, the one thing I did want to say, I was disappointed I didn't see this. ESPN made a big deal about the Rams opening in L.A., as they should, and they trotted out all those Hall of Famers. Well, at halftime of the Raiders game, which you wouldn't know unless you were there, I think, they had a ceremony for Kenny Stabler, the late, great Kenny Stabler, who just got into the Hall of Fame, should have been in years ago, in my opinion, and they trotted out all those guys. You know, Jim Otto can barely walk, but he was there. They brought John Madden out. He can barely walk, but he was there. Ted Hendricks, all those guys from the glory days. And it was great to see them have a ceremony. Kenny Stabler's family was there. But my goodness, I thought he should have been in years and years ago. They showed replays of the Holy Roller. You know, they changed the rules because Stabler is the guy when he was falling down that playoff game. He fumbled the ball into the end zone. Dave Casper recovered it and they won the game.
Right.
Yeah, and they changed the rule. But I thought he was a great quarterback who should have been in the Hall of Fame years ago, and it was good to see. But, for example, on ESPN, they did like 2 minutes on the Rams, and they did nothing on the Raiders. And I don't equate a ceremony for Stabler with, you know, football coming back to L.A., the Rams coming back since 1979. I get that. But, my goodness, Kenny Stabler, the snake. I mean, he was an unbelievable, gutsy leader, Alabama QB in that long line going back to Namath and Stabler and those kinds of guys. So I thought it was great to be there. I wouldn't advise going out there unless you're, like, prepared to be, like, you know, it was just not a great place. But the fans are crazy. You know, it's their dilapidated building, so they don't care.
Right.
But the Raiders lost a tough one, and I have qualms now about – I'm not changing my picks, but their defense has to get better quickly or else they're going to have real problems.
31st in the National Football League. You are correct, my friend. I'm on the phone with Steve Callis. I'm Joe Stajak here for about another 20 minutes. We're going to go over, Steve, I want your thoughts on this deal. We'll start with the AFC since we were talking about the Raiders. There are five teams, 2-0 after 2 weeks, the Patriots, Steelers, the Texans, the Broncos, the incumbent champs, and, of course, the Ravens, who came back from a 20-point deficit to beat the Browns, who are starting Cody Kessler this weekend. At least that's who's slotted to go. Best team in the AFC at 2-0. Your thoughts, my friend?
I'm going to go with the Steelers. I like what the Broncos are doing, you know, with Simeon. Look, as we talked about last year, you know, Peyton Manning was terrible. Nine touchdowns, 17 picks. Osweiler was good, not great. Simeon fits into that group. You know, can they come back and win like the Bears with their, you know, I mean like the Ravens with Trent Dilfer? Yes, they can.
Yep.
But if I had to pick one team right now, it would be the Steelers. But as you know, I think the Patriots are going to win the Super Bowl. I can't say right now they're a good 2-0 team. They're on their third quarterback, but they are 2-0, and I think that's a minor miracle. You know, all credit to the coaching staff. Belichick's a genius. Yes, yes, yes. But I think if we're looking out 16 games when they get ready for the playoffs, I think with Brady back and Gronkowski back and Ninkovich back, their offensive line's getting better. Guys are coming back from injury as well. I think they're the best team. But right now, if I had to pick one team, I'd pick the Steelers.
I would agree with you, at least out of the 2-0 squad. Let's go over the NFC. Only three teams at 2-0, the Eagles, the Giants. And how about those Sam Bradford-led Vikings? Now, let's start with those two teams because I think there might be a team that's not on that list. You might be certainly far and away better than those two teams, but the best 2-0 team right now in the NFC, my friend.
You know, I think I'm going to go with the Vikings because I don't think they miss. I've seen some people say that they'll be better with Sam Bradford, the quarterback, than Teddy Bridgewater. I don't know that that's true, but I will say they don't miss a beat with Bradford playing. We'll see if he can stay healthier. But of those three teams, the Eagles, you know who they've played. The Giants couldn't score an offensive touchdown against, you know, the 52-49 game last year.
Yep.
they couldn't score a touchdown. So I'm going to give it to the Vikings right now.
I agree with you. Now, 0-2 in the AFC. I mean, we're talking about the direct. We've got the Dolphins, the Buffalo Bills, the Cleveland Browns, as we spoke of, Andrew Luck-led Colts, and Jacksonville Jags. How much of a leash does Gus Bradley get? He came in when Chip Kelly came in, and you know everyone around here was all over Gus. They wanted the Gus bus here in town. We ended up Chip Kelly. That was a disaster. But You know, Gus, that team still hasn't been able to turn it around. Blake Bortles puts up some good numbers, at least at a glance, but he does have a tendency to turn the ball over too much. What's the thoughts on Gus Bradley down there in Jacksonville?
Yeah, I think Gus is on the short leash. I thought that Jacksonville would be better. We talked about the conference they're in where Indianapolis can't keep Luck standing up, you know, standing up in the pocket. The Titans are okay. They're on the rise. Jacksonville, I thought, was on the rise. Houston's the best team in that division. We talked about that, you know, before week one. So I think the Jags are in trouble. You know, they get the Ravens at home. If they lose that game, you know, pretty much 0-3, you can count them out. The Ravens are good, not great. They're better than last year, but how good are they? I don't know. And, you know, I just don't think Jacksonville is going to get there this year. Although, as we talked, that is such a weak division. I think the Texans are going to win it pretty easily now. And they did nothing in Indianapolis to help Luck. And he's another guy who's been battered. Now, he's better than Jay Cutler, but he's been battered. He hasn't been in the league as long. But, you know, he's got to be looking to throw the ball as he's you know, dropping back because he has no time to throw the ball. And I don't think that's going to change.
0-2 teams in the NFC. We have the Skins. We have the Saints. There's the Bears. I'm going to go off the board and say the Rams are the worst team, but of the 0-2 teams, your thoughts on the three that I just mentioned there?
I'm going to go with the Bears, especially if Cutler's hurt now, because Hoyer is just another failed backup to Tom Brady. You know, it's interesting. Belichick, yeah. He doesn't really have coaches come out who are any good. Charlie Weiss, Romeo Crennel. I mean, he doesn't have that coaching tree that the Parcells has. And then when you look at the backups to Tom Brady, Matt Cassel was good for a while, a year or two. But Hoyer has been up and down. You know, give him credit. He's the only Browns quarterback, I think, in the last, what, 7, 8, 10 years to have a winning record. So you give him a little credit for that. But the Mallett, you know, I thought he'd be better. So is Garoppolo the next multimillionaire after 5.5 quarters? Well, he signed through next year, by the way, for the Patriots. I don't know if there's a plan of succession if you knew Tom Brady was going to retire after next year. But, of course, last year Brady said he wants to play 10 more years. Can he beat Tom Brady for another 2, 3, 4, 5 years? I don't know. This 4-game suspension might actually help him, keep him off the field. He'll only be on the field for 12 games. I don't know. But I just don't know how good these guys are going to be. So, again, we'll just have to wait and see what happens. But if I had to pick a team 0-2 in the NFC, I think I'd have to pick the Chicago Bears. I think not the Rams because, again, they have an excellent defense. I don't know what happened the first week in San Francisco. They did a good job against Seattle. Defense is always going to keep you in games. How Jeff Fisher got an extension is the mystery of the year. But I think I'd go Bears right now. And if he's out, if Cutler's out, then I think they're in even deeper trouble.
All right, time now, Steve Callis, for the segment that I dread, at least dreaded last week. I'm going to dread it this week because I have to announce my picks. I went 1-2 again. I'm 2-4 on the year. My Skins obviously went down to the boys at home. They are on death's door as they face the Giants this week. I had Seattle, you know, because I was betting against the Rams. They get beat on the road, 9-3. I did have the Saints. I think they were +5. I had given Drew Brees those points. So I salvaged the win there as they lost to the Giants by 3. How'd you do last week, and what do you like this week?
Yeah, I went 2-1 last week. I had my first week mistake of betting all road teams. That was not intelligent. This week I had the mistake of betting an over-under. So since it was 52-49 last year, Saints and Giants, I thought, you know, it would be half of that and they'd cover this year. Of course, the Giants didn't even score a touchdown. So that'll probably be the last over-under I picked. But I did come back betting the old faithfuls, you know, if you will. Patriots -4.5. You kind of had to sweat, you know, in the first quarter you were laughing 21-0, but they did cover.
Yep.
They would have had to have scored that touchdown to, you know, cover and tie up the game. Miami, I mean, so they won by 7. And Denver -6, you know, they won by 14, but it's interesting because, as you probably know, they were up 6 late in the game, recovered a fumble, scored a touchdown, and went for 2. So it looks like 14, maybe they were a lock up 7, but they weren't. That would have been a push. So I'm 2-1, 3-3. I will not bet all road teams again. I will not pick another over-under the rest of the year. If you want my 3 games, though, I do have 3 games. I'm going Cardinals -4.5 over the Bills. Everybody's going to say the Bills are, you know, their backs are against the wall and they're 0-2, but these are the Cardinals. The Cardinals are very good. And even though they lost to the Patriots against a good Patriot defense, they could have won had they kicked the field goal, the 47-yard field goal that they missed, and they just blew out, you know, Jameis Winston, he kind of learned a lesson. I don't know if he's progressing as much as everyone thinks. They won 40-7. Now the Cardinals are on the road. That's the only road team I'm picking. But I'll go Cardinals minus 4.5 over the Bills. I'm going Cowboys minus 4.5 over the Bears, no matter who plays quarterback. Again, the Cowboys are going to have a good running game. Prescott, I don't know if he's just a protector of the ball, but he has played very well, and he is a rookie. So I'm going to go Cowboys over the Bears. And it hurts me to say this, but I'm going Titans minus 1 over the Raiders at home. The Raiders just have not shown me enough, and I don't know how good they're going to be on the road, even though they won week 1 on the road. So those are my three picks: Titans minus 1 over the Raiders, Cardinals minus 4.5 over the Bills, Cowboys minus 4.5 over the Bears. How about you?
All right. You like all the faves. I'm going dogs this weekend. I'm going dogs, and then my picks usually end up as dogs. But Skins are knocking on death's door. I can hear the death rattle right now. I think they at least keep it close, if not come up with a big win at MetLife. They're getting 4.5 this weekend versus the Giants, who've had trouble scoring, although their defense is much improved. I think Kirk Cousins rebounds, and they find a way to either keep it within a field goal or win the game outright. I also like the Lions plus 7.5 at Green Bay. Divisional game. Green Bay's had a rough time scoring last week against Minnie. Detroit can put up some points, and I think that's just too many points to give the Lions against Green Bay right now, who isn't playing like Green Bay, I think, should. And I also like the Vikings over the Panthers plus 7 at Carolina, I think, with that defense. And we'll see if Sam Bradford can follow up his performance with a decent showing. I think that's just too many points, and I wouldn't be surprised if they went in there and stole one from Cam Newton and the boys. But I like the Skins plus the 4.5, the Lions plus 7.5 at Green Bay, and the Vikings. You know, I'm just looking at that right now. All three teams on the road. Didn't you make that mistake last week, Faye? Betting three road teams.
Okay, yeah, that's tough. Anyway, that's tough. But you know, to get that extra point in both of those situations, you're down 14 late. Your team gets a meaningless touchdown. The backdoor cover, always a possibility when you're getting that extra half point.
Always love me a backdoor cover, my friend. Steve Callis, we've got about a little under 15 minutes. Let's just switch to baseball. You know, I wanted to circle back on one thing because you are a legal analyst. You do have that law degree. I'm not sure if that has anything to do with the next question I'm about to ask you, but I know you're very good with the kind of rules and appeals and things that go on in the National Football League. This concerns the Philadelphia Eagles. Lane Johnson has an appeal hearing on October 4th. His appeal in terms of his 10-game possible suspension for the second time he's been caught with PEDs. What is that about? What could happen? What could not happen? And where the hell is the B sample? How long does it take to test the B sample?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting concept because then you get into those going back to baseball, the Ryan Braun stuff, where maybe they can try and test, argue against the way the sample was taken. But generally speaking, especially with the player, he wants to get that B sample to also have his own guys tested. The problem with the NFL and with Major League Baseball in the old days, pre-Ryan Braun, is it was hard for you, the player, to get access to the B sample. But now I think both sides can test that B sample. I think generally speaking, a lot of times you make these appeals to get, you know, 4 games cut down to 3. Maybe he can get 10 games cut down to 8. I don't know necessarily if it's about proof or arguments, et cetera, et cetera. But if you go through the things and have kept your nose clean during the interim, you know, maybe Goodell will have him come in for an interview or something like that. Generally speaking, you can get those cut down a little bit. So I think he's probably going to get it cut a little, but he's not getting it from 10 to 4, for example. I think it might go down a game or two as almost like a courtesy for going through the process. But, again, we'll just have to wait and see. You know, the big thing about Brady, whatever you think of Deflategate, the biggest thing about the Brady case is the NFL said, screw you to all the players. I, Roger Goodell, am in charge, and now I got a Second Circuit Court of Appeals decision to prove it. So there's no point wasting your time with my authority until the next collective bargaining agreement. So I think that's what's come out of this. He can drop the hammer pretty much wherever he wants now, and I think that's what came out of Deflategate more than did Tom Brady deserve a 4-game suspension or not.
Okay, I hear you, and I will say this, because some of the past suspensions have been a little arbitrary, and they've been reduced. Greg Hardy had his reduced a while ago. I know it's, you know, he
he's got 10 games this year. But Tom Brady was 4, Ray Rice was 2, then he was 6, then he was indefinite. The rules say that if you get caught second time for PEDs, 10-game suspension. That's it. That's the rule. Why is and if that B sample comes up hot, why are we talking about a reduced sentence for Lane Johnson?
I think only, and I don't know that it will be a reduced sentence. I'm just saying, generally speaking, there's been such, I don't know if inconsistency is the right word or not. I guess it is the right word, frankly.
No, that's the right word.
That most of the guys who come through the process have been able to at least get something reduced a little bit. So I only say that because of just seeing in the past what has happened. Now, we haven't had a lot of guys get the second PED to get the 10 games, so maybe you're right. Maybe they'll just take a hard stance. Sorry, both of these samples were positive. Don't care what you say, what you did, what you put or didn't put into your body, what you knew or didn't know. But again, sometimes when you go through the process and you get a lawyer and you make some kind of presentation and or you kept your nose clean and they think you're a good citizen, although you already have strike one, obviously,
yeah,
from the four-game suspension. It's kind of a – but I think the overriding view right here now, for better or worse, I think for worse – is that Roger Goodell has the power to essentially be judge, jury, and executioner, and that's something the players gave up a long time ago. And I think the next time the collective bargaining agreement comes up, it might not be till 2020. I'm not sure exactly, but there's going to be a free-for-all when that happens because the players won't want to live with this system anymore. And it's a bad system, no matter what the court said about it. It's a terrible system, but their defense, the court's defense is, it's a terrible system, but you agree to it. And that's what happened.
Right.
So
right.
Do I think he'll get knocked down a game or two? Maybe, but you're right. Technically, he should just get 10 games, too bad. But again, this is all about the power of Goodell. If he wants to seem like the beneficent dictator, maybe he'll give him 9 or 8. You know, but it's mm-hmm. the scariest thing of all is that you can't find another place where these guys are judge, jury, and executioner. But again, that was collectively bargained for. That's why the NFL players have a big problem.
Absolutely. All right, Steve Callis, great stuff. We're going to move over to baseball. Your wheelhouse right now. I want to talk a little bit about the Yankees. Big rivalry, one of the biggest in all of sports. They go up to Fenway and just get swept this past weekend, get swept right out of the building. And Hanley Ramirez pretty much took care of any Yankees chances or hopes to make the playoffs.
No question. I mean, we talked about last week, I thought the Mets would get in and the Yankees wouldn't. But the reason I'm particularly angry as a Yankee fan is I agreed with all the deals they made until they sent Miller packing. And if you watched over the weekend, there were at least 2 games where if Miller was around, you can make a strong case the Yankees would have won. Dellin Betances, as good as he is, I don't know if he's getting tired. You know, he was kind of the middle guy in that 3, you can argue, one of the greatest bullpens of all time. When Miller, you know, happily went to the 7th inning, Betances, where he's been in the 8th, and then Chapman in the 9th. You got to get rid of Chapman. He's a free agent. But you had Miller for 2 more years at $9 million a year. He could be your closer. Betances could be the 7th and 8th guy or 8th guy, much like Rivera and Wetland in 96. I don't know why they gave Miller away, but this was the death knell. Hanley Ramirez is officially a Yankee killer. 9 for 16, 4 home runs, 9 RBIs, including 2 home runs Sunday night on national TV, including the game winner, which he hit over the Green Monster and out of the park. Now, you know Ramirez, he's an excellent player, but very streaky, and unfortunately for the Yankees, I don't think Joe Girardi did such a great job with his bullpen. You know, if you tell me Betances isn't available, then don't bring him in and he loses the game. But again, they went from arguably one of the greatest bullpens of all time, certainly the greatest 3-man bullpen, I think, of all time, because you had essentially 3 closers, to throwing Betances into the deep water, and he's pitched more this year, and he looks tired, and he looks like he's afraid to throw his fastball. So to drop mm-hmm. him in that role after keeping him in the comfort, and it is a comfort in the 7th or 8th inning, to then do that, I think, was a huge mistake. And again, I don't think I've ever seen the Yankees wave the white flag, but I thought they waved the white flag, and now they're not going to make it. But I think I can go along with everything but the Miller deal, because you had Miller for 2 more years. So if I could tell you had Betances in the 8th, maybe last out in the 7th, Miller in the 9th for the end of this year and the next 2 years, you'd say, oh, my goodness, that's fantastic. And for some reason they traded him. I don't know all the prospects they got for him. I know none of them are in the major leagues now, but they better turn out something real good because now he's closing for the Indians. I think they can make a run in the American League. I liked them before they got Miller. And, you know, I just watched him the other day on TV go lights out in the ninth inning again. He's 8-1. Now, some of those were with the Yankees, don't get me wrong. But why they let him go, that would be the one question that's totally beyond me. But Hanley Ramirez, officially a Yankee killer.
Unbelievable. Let's talk about those miracle Mets. I mean, Harvey, Matt, Nice, Wheeler, they're all out, and it looks like 43-year-old Bartolo Colon might be their best pitcher of five in the starting rotation.
You know, it's so funny. I'm not a Mets guy, but if you follow the Mets, and I certainly do, 2 years ago they were thinking of trading Colon and thinking of trading Murphy, and I wrote a great column that's probably still up at stevecallis.com from 2 years ago this time. And I said, whatever you do, don't trade Murphy, don't trade Colon. Colon just had that magical Mickey Lolich, I'm fat, I'm overweight, but I can pitch all day. I got great movement on my ball. As you think right now of the Mets, and I also wrote an article last year, the Mets should go to a six-man rotation. I interviewed Jim Cott many years ago, and we talked about, could someone ever win 30 games again? The answer was no, because when you went from the four-man rotation to the five-man rotation, you went from 41 starts a year for your top pitcher to 33 or 34 starts. So what are you going to go, 30-2? That's never going to happen. The better question is, will anyone win 25 games again? And nobody's won since Welch of the A's back in 1990. So that's the real question. But what's happened now is just like Cy Young pitched every third day, and then in the 20s and 30s and 40s, it became every fourth day. And then in the 60s, Cott told me, and I think he's right, I did some research, the 69 Mets with, you know, Kuzman and Seaver and Gary Gentry, even a young Nolan Ryan was the spot starter, they were the first ones to go to the five-man rotation to protect arms. So look at the guys they have now. Why not protect them? I wrote this last year. Why not protect them with a six-man rotation? And look what you have now. Harvey, out for the year. DeGrom, out for the year. Matt's missing a month trying to come back now. Waiting for Wheeler is like waiting for Godot. Is the guy ever going to pitch? So there's your four guys. All they have left is Syndergaard, who got bombed by Atlanta the other night. So you can make a case if they're in a one-game playoff. I assume they'll start Syndergaard, but it could very well be Bartolo Colon, who just chugs along. I think he'll pitch next year. He's a very good major league pitcher, and to want to trade them, they couldn't give him away 2 years ago. The reason I wrote to keep him is not because he's great, but to keep him because he's a veteran with playoff experience on a young staff of Mets. And now I'm saying to you, if he's not the number one pitcher, he's definitely the number two, because the other four guys literally can't pitch now. So that's a big problem for the Mets. I still think they make it because they get in. They get in on weak schedule syndrome. Weak schedule syndrome is good if you're the Mets. They got Atlanta for two more, Philly for seven, and at Miami for three. That's a pretty weak schedule, whereas the Giants and St. Louis have much tougher schedules. The Giants have five more games with the Dodgers. St. Louis has, you know, three against the Cubs and three against the Pirates, among other things. The Mets make it because, not because they're the best team, but because they have the weakest schedule.
Let me just ask you this, probably the last question before we have to sign off, my friend, because watching last night, of course, another huge rivalry in sports, the Giants and the Dodgers, and I love baseball, but I really hate when guys get all up in arms because a guy hits a home run and maybe flips his bat, like 3 years ago, like the Puig and Baumgartner, Madison Baumgartner,
yes,
obviously have a history, and
yes,
a swinging bunt, whatever. Baumgartner throws him out at first, talking about Puig in the late innings, and then stares him down and says, why are you staring at me? And the bench is clear, and then Baumgartner drops his gloves and gets all big and huffy when there's like nine guys in between him and Puig, and it's just, it's, then they show back, it was like 2014, Puig gets a home run off of him at Dodger Stadium. It wasn't even a real bad flip, but I know that's like an unwritten rule, you don't do that, but I mean, seriously, like Madison Baumgartner, does he need to get involved in all of that? He's kind of, you know, great enough on his own merit. He ends up leaving the game. Derek Law comes in and loses it for the Giants in the ninth inning. You know, Joe Blanton gets the win.
Yeah, those are two big dudes. I'd like to see them go at it, frankly, but you know,
yeah,
Puig's a linebacker. Puig's a linebacker. Bumgarner gave up that home run and then hit Puig in a later game. So this all came back. Why they looked at each other, why they talked to each other is beyond me. But, you know, it was much ado about nothing. It was another baseball fight. Nothing happened. They took him out of the game with, like, 97 pitches. And you're right, they lost the game, and that's a big game for the Giants to lose. So he should keep his head, Bumgarner, but he's a tough competitor, as is Puig.
Those Dodgers are becoming the Los Angeles Kings with all their flyers. They got Joe Bland, Carlos Ruiz, Jimmy, Chase Utley. We'll see what happens. Stevie, we've got to go. Appreciate your time, as always. Great stuff. We'll talk to you next week on Sportsology.
Good to be with you. Can't wait.
All right. Thanks, Stevie. I'm Joe Stazak. Talk to you next week, everybody. Thanks for listening.